Come close here now. I shall tell ye of how the clans of the Dwarf Forge Mountains came to hold fealty over the carking and troublesome fire giants, and the old code by which the match of champions was made, and how the dwarven champion, the Mestari, came to be the revered patron of all those living under the Dwarf Forge Mountains. Taru picked up her magical hammer and hefted it in her hand. She was dressed for battle in heavy chain and a stout metal helm.
I have things to ask of you, Matava. Things I have not asked before.
She nodded and plodded the way that was laid before her. It has been said that no closer binding is there than a dwarven warrior and her weapon. This may be so, and it was certain for Taru and her Matava. She had just left from the nobles of the Silver Mountain clandoms from a great and solemn ceremony. She was named the champion, the Mestari, of the whole of the Dwarven people, and the Queen Matriarch sparingly announced her mission and its importance. Her Majesty was not pleased that the champion of all Dwarven kind hailed from the Blue Range Mountains, and not from her own, the Silver.
The fate of the Dwarf Forge Mountains will be decided for years to come. For 3 10 years. Our future is entirely dependent upon your skill.
And just like that, Taru was sent off. Kilvin, her shield bearer, who was also from the Blue Range, met Taru at the appointed place, and there was no ceremony.
Kilvin.
She nodded to him that was to accompany her, and they continued on. The first stop was to the blacksmith, whose smithy was nearly at the center of the mountain complex. Seppa the smith was commissioned to supply Taru with a shield. When Taru arrived, Seppa was putting a final polish upon it.
It is greatly rended, more than most other shields. Now, you may wish to carry it, wield it even by that single handle inside. Sure, and it would be very maneuverable and quick, but a heavy blow from a giant and you'll break your wrist for certain. Now, slide your arm into the sling there, see how snug it becomes.
Taru slid her arm inside the sheath on the inside of the shield, and it enveloped her arm and its edges tightened up to her shoulders.
Now your shoulder takes the shock, and it dissipates along the whole of your body. And you can kneel down and gain coverage for your legs and your helm. Isn't that a fine piece?
Taru nodded her head and tested how restrictive the shield was for movement. She had no doubts as to its strength. Versatility in a shield was all important in her upcoming match. At once, she may need to rely upon it for her life, and another moment, she may need to not be burdened by its presence at all. She thanked Seppa for his expertise.
I make promise to give you a report of its utility when I return.
Seppa nodded in silent acknowledgement that that time may never come to pass. When Seppa's smithy disappeared from view, Taru tossed the shield to Kilvin, who fumbled with it and nearly dropped it.
You are to be my shield bearer, aren't you? Well, bear my shield then.
The next stop was two more levels down at the goldsmithery. It was less of a forge like Seppa's sweaty shop and more of an embellishing workshop. Fine work was wrought into golden objects, and its clientele were some of the wealthiest clans in all of the Dwarf Forge Mountains. Taru met the goldwright Kulta Kirjanin, who presented her with what looked like a yellow gold crown with white gold inlay.
Fine workmanship. No jewels?
I don't do my best work for a giant's armband.
Fair enough. What else you got for me?
Kulta Kirjanin produced some other objects of normal size, a drinking chalice an eating bowl, all of them with the finest workmanship of the highest clans. Clearly, the Goldrite held the items with disdain, but he still winced when Taru gathered them up into a burlap sack before leaving. Kultakirtanen gave Taru a deep and respectful bow.
Your service to our people is beyond measure, whether for ill or gain.
Well, either way, it will be over soon. Many thanks for your contribution.
And Taru left the workshop abruptly, Kelvin in tow. He was tossed the gunny sack full of clanking gold items to carry along with the shield.
We have one more stop.
After winding down three more stairways to the lower levels, Taru made an odd turn to the northern wing of the underground complex. Narrower and narrower the passageways became, and the floor even became uneven. Kelvin struggled with his cumbersome burdens and the unhewn footing. Before them lay an open chamber with a tall ceiling and was filled with strange-smelling smoke. Kelvin realized this was an out-of-the-way part of the massive cave complex because they desired direct ventilation to the open air outside the mountain, and perhaps direct access to the outside itself. Taru waited patiently. It seemed odd to Kelvin that despite Taru's status of champion of the clans and her important mission, that she would be content to wait, or that someone would be content to make her wait. But wait she did. Presently, a bent-over figure hobbled out to her, carrying in her hands a small spherical clay pot. She walked slowly, carefully with each step, and extremely concerned with the object she carried. Only after she delivered it to Taru did she deign to speak in a crackled, wheezy voice.
This carries the essence of the top of the mountain, the wind, the cold, the ice, the barrenness, the isolation, and loneliness, too.
I'll have no need for the latter, but the bitter cold will do me well. It will completely freeze whatever it touches.
To the bone, to the very essence.
That is good, then. Thank you for your contribution.
Taru gave a bow and left the chamber. Kelvin gave a frown and thought the wheezing figure should have shown more deference to their champion. Taru gave it no notice.
Now, we travel below.
They found the main staircase and made their way downward. Past the forges they went down. Past the digging mines they went down. Past the lower reaches of the Undermountain complex. There was always another set of stairs going down. Presently, they set out down a cascade of stairs that met with no other stairs or passageways. Kelvin broke the silence of their echoing steps when they came to another flat landing.
Why are there landings here? They don't connect with anything.
For rest.
Don't seem to need for rest yet.
That's because we're going down.
Taru started off down the next flight of stairs. 50 landings Kelvin counted, and having to carry the bulky shield and the sack of clanking gold, he was glad when they stopped at one and took a drink of water.
How much farther?
Almost there. That is why we are resting now.
Kelvin was surprised and considered this. He kept all his questions to himself and let Taru rest. She took her helmet off and leaned against the wall and closed her eyes. Kelvin was too nervous and excited to relax, but forced himself to remain quiet. After a short time of snoring, Taru sat up and replaced her helmet back onto her head and stood up. She grabbed up her hammer, which was attached to her belt.
Not long now, Matava. I'll take that shield now. should have a device on it. I name you Suojatu, Protector. Fits well. Here, take this sack the crone gave me, and have a care it doesn't break upon you. I will call for it at some point. Be ready. This is your most important task, shield bearer.
Kilvin accepted the sack with reverence, and not a small amount of trepidation. And then Taru strolled out down the final stairway. When they finally reached the last step, they found themselves in an unhewn cave with rough walls and stalactites hanging down and stalagmites thrusting up from the floor. Kilvin couldn't help noticing they looked like giant, horrific teeth waiting to shred them up. Taru rocked straight ahead, and Kilvin followed, noticing that the air had become much hotter within this cavern system. After winding some way through the Cavern of Fangs, as Kilvin decided to call it, they came upon a doorway. Not a natural chamber opening, but a proper doorway, with an arch at the apex and two stone guardian gargoyle statues on either side of it. Beyond lay a glowing red light, which wavered in the heat that was emanating out from the doorway.
Here we are. Now, we shall see.
Kilvin was about to respond when he just realized that Taru was not talking to him, but instead to her hammer, Matavar. He fell in behind as Taru passed through the doorway. The heat was like a palpable wall that struck Kilvin as he entered the cavern beyond. It was much like the rough-hewn passageway before the doorway, but it was a great deal hotter, and the stalactites which hung from above dripped with a glowing red rock drizzle, which hissed when it hit the stalagmites below or upon the cave floor. The passage gave way to a gigantic cavern, so huge Kilvin could not discern the sides or the roof. There were well-rounded boulders scattered about, and occasional mountains of rocks in the distance. Kilvin knew he was still underground, but to his eye, it appeared he was on some fiery plain.
And so we wait.
Taru slid Matava into her belt and pulled her water skin off her shoulder. After wiping her brow, she tossed the water skin so it landed at Kilvin's feet.
I shall have need of the rest of that later on. Or perhaps not.
There was an irony in her voice that did not escape Kilvin's ears. He picked up the water skin off the cavern floor and set it upon a good-sized rock. He noted the freestanding rocks were comprised of volcanic materials. Suddenly, there came a loud thudding sound. It echoed off the far walls of the place and still filled the cavern. At first, Kilvin thought it sounded like a heartbeat with its regular rhythm. But then the beats went out of synchronization and he realized that they were footsteps. Very large footsteps. And more than one. Through the haze of the wavering heat, Kilvin saw two silhouettes, black against the orange and red curtain that encompassed the cavern. They coalesced into walking shapes, which then came closer and became more distinct. And closer they came. And then it became apparent that these shapes were of enormous size. They had dark skin and flaming orange hair and glowing red eyes. One carried a large shield and a long spear. He was helmed with a great headpiece and was draped with clattering of dragon scales sewn or fitted into a breastplate and greaves. As they grew closer, the floor shook with their footsteps.
Come.
Taru set out to meet the new arrivals. Kilvin followed, and when Taru stopped, he was about to stand behind and off to her left side when she heard Taru mutter,
"Other side!"
And he scrambled to her right flank.
"You have one task, no matter what happens. Listen for me to call you. Otherwise, stay apart from me, far apart."
Understood.
Taru turned full forward and faced the great glowing giants.
I am Taru, champion of the clans of the dwarves.
I am Anta Putkat, chosen of the Fire Lords. The victor of the contest shall accept fealty and tribute from the vanquished for 3 10-years. This is my brother's son, Sisarin Poika. He is carrying my shield and is allowed to furnish weapon choices to me.
The fire giant indicated the other by his side. He held a great sword and mace in his hands, and slung across his back was a second shield, this one rounded with a spike. Taru stepped slightly to the side and pointed back to Kilvin with her hammer.
This is Kilvin, my appointed shield bearer, and he shall bear me away should I be vanquished this day.
Make preparations for your own death. Very wise, champion.
Shall we begin the contest?
If you are in that much of a hurry to die, then let us begin.
You've been listening to Taru vs. the Fire Giant, a side quest short story of the Dungeons & Damsels series by Unchained Productions, written and directed by David Ian. Voice talent by K.C. Cooper, David Ian, Chelsea Jansen, Sam A. Mowry, and Daniel Rovan. Sound engineering by Dino D. Elfwell. Sound design by David Ian. Theme by Ron Perovich. Music by Mark Rose. Medieval music by Johnny Easton. Taru vs. the Fire Giant is a side quest short story of the Dungeons & Damsels series by Unchained Productions.